You may be seated. You've already caught my bluff. I am not Episcopalian. I was raised in the Reformed Church, and I have to say, this is very high up, even for a Calvinist. I have long had a fear of heights, which my therapist recast as a fear of falling. So in keeping with today's gospel lesson, please catch me. As a young seminarian, I had a supervisor at my job who was a Catholic priest. And he gave me a very significant piece of information. He said, "Ann, clergy do not get paid much in cash. But if you're doing the job well, you will get paid richly in stories." I have to say, St. Michael's, that you have paid my family over 100 times what you could pay any clergy person in stories. Because you provided my family with the family story that gets told every Thanksgiving or Christmas when things get a little tense or, you know, whatever in the family gathering. One of my cousins would say, "Uncle Norm, tell the story about how you fell in the grave." And my dad would proceed. It starts with, "Well, I was a new minister in 1965 at a church in Astoria. I got called by the funeral home to go and do a graveside service for a woman who had led a very full life. It was at the St. Michael's Cemetery. The day before, the gravediggers had dug a little too far in one direction. So they went and fixed it by putting a piece of plywood over it and a piece of astroturf over that. They didn't warn me about that, though. My father is a very large man. He's 6'5", about 300 pounds. And he would get larger as he would tell the story. So, well, it rained that night, and so the plywood got a little wiggly, and as I was doing the funeral service, I suddenly looked up, and I could see just a sliver of light and the bottom of a casket. Every year, my cousins ask him to tell that story, even on Zoom Thanksgiving at the height of the pandemic last year. And every year, we laugh and laugh and laugh. My mother chimes in with saying, "Well, and when you came back to the parsonage, I said, 'What have you been doing, Norman? Mud wrestling?' We had to send his robe out to get dry cleaned." Apparently, every time they just about had him out, he'd slip back in, and then they'd have to catch him. The story just never ceases to get old for us. Today, we have a story that's a similar fish story. It's one that gets told over and over again in the church, right? I would bet that many of us as children even sang the song about it, "I will make you fishers of men," complete with hand motions. Textually inaccurate hand motions, I might add. This is like a rod and reel fishing. We were net fishing, but it's, I guess, not as great a hand gesture with the song. The thing about that song, though, is that it really focuses on the idea that we are going to be the ones who are doing the fishing. It doesn't set the stage for us thinking that perhaps we're the ones being caught. Today, on this rather cold, little dreary Sunday after Groundhog Day, where winter seems to be looming, I'm going to warn you, this is not a sermon full of deep theology or intense theological exegesis. It's really a sermon of stories. So, pardon me if we're just going to have some fun in church telling the stories. That's really what the Bible is, okay? I get paid richly in stories, both at my church, and I serve as one of the chaplains for the fire department. Let me tell you, first responders love to tell stories. And I've actually thought a bit about them. The part of the story that's so good is either, or sometimes both, how the person has gotten themselves into trouble, crying out, or how they figured out how to go and help the person in trouble. That's pretty much the narrative arc of a first responder story. One day, I was visiting our local firehouse in Greenpoint, which is kind of close to where my church is. And the lieutenant said, "Oh, chaplain, have I got a good story for you." I said, "Oh, bring it on. I'm game for any good story." He said, "Well, one of your hipsters..." Like, all hipsters are my hipsters, okay. "So one of your hipsters decided to get himself good and drunk the other night and fell off the roof of one of the buildings. But he was one of the luckiest guys in the world, and he got tangled up in the old cable lines." I think the lieutenant might have added in some comment about how lucky he was that we still had cable lines and not running everything on Wi-Fi. So this fellow had gotten himself, the lieutenant actually gave me the gesture similar to the fishing song. He's like, got himself overturned on his back in the middle with like just hanging on the wires. And there was a sense of amazement that he could be so lucky as to gotten hung up in the wires. I said, "Well, what'd you do?" He said, "Well, we got him down." End of the story. But then he did add on, he was actually really lucky that he was so drunk he didn't know how much trouble he was in. Because if he'd have known, he would have panicked and it would have been over. I thought about that. You know, sometimes we need to be caught. And we need to be a little clueless about how desperate we are. Perhaps clueless enough to trust that God will catch us. It's hard to trust that God will catch us. It's hard to believe that we might get caught. Caught in a net or some old cable lines. But yet it happens every day. Similar to the Apostle Paul, who writes about being a real jerk and experiencing God's grace. He too got caught. And in response to having gotten caught in God's grace, he became a lover and a builder of God's people. That in life, we get caught, and in response, we help catch one another. We reciprocate out of gratitude for what God has given to us. So today I thought I would reciprocate by giving you a story that I enjoy. It's one that I wrote for a story slam among pastors. Like the Moth Story Hour, but with Jesus. Now, I had to find the notes. There we go. Okay. And this is the end of the story. That's it. That's all you're getting for the theology. That's all you're getting for the Bible. Just enjoy the story now. There's more where it came from, the theology and the Bible, and I trust that Kate will go and give it to you next Sunday. So I often have a hard time accepting good things. Perhaps it relates to my Calvinist childhood. The week before my 40th birthday, I had to talk with my therapist about how uncomfortable I am when friends sing happy birthday to me. It still makes me cringe. I've been working on a book of stories about ministry. When I got to the part in the process where I had to ask someone to write the foreword and other people to write endorsements, I really found it difficult. Because in short, I was going to have to ask for good things, which I'd rather just avoid. The book is called Be the Brave One, in part because I serve as a chaplain with the fire department in New York. But you might think that that's an ironic title, given that I just confessed to you that I cringe during happy birthday, and that if I get this far off the ground, my stomach starts to sway. So I asked the commissioner of the fire department if he would write the foreword for my book. I asked him because I really respect him. He writes well, and he's in the business of rescuing people, and I really needed to be rescued with my editor, who kept reminding me that I was well overdue on getting her that foreword. Plus, I will also add that the fire commissioner met his wife 50 years ago at a Sunday school picnic for their Lutheran church. And he's the fire department commissioner, right? That's a big deal. A few weeks later, he emailed me what he had written. Sensing that it might be too overwhelmingly good, I forwarded it to my wife, who read it to herself while I laid down on our sofa and covered my head with a pillow. It wasn't enough to drown out her saying, "Ooh, this is good. So good." Finally, I managed to sit up enough to have her read it to me. It was so good. I couldn't believe it was happening to me. I needed to reply to the commissioner so he knew I had received his email. I learned this part of life's lessons in etiquette from a sign at the FDNY training facility that says, "A message not acknowledged is a message not received." So even though I didn't really know what to say and I was too overwhelmed by all the goodness and my feelings of awkwardness, etc., I typed back a note. It said, "Thank you so much." And then without thinking, I added, "I love you, bro." Later that night, I lay in bed reflecting on the day and literally laughing to myself about how ridiculous it is that I had just emailed the commissioner of the FDNY and told him I loved him, bro. My wife, who was drifting nicely off to sleep, felt me chuckling and thought that perhaps I might be choking to death. So she asked if I was okay. "Okay, yeah, yes, I'm okay, but I'm sure lucky that I work for the fire department. It would be really weird, don't you think, if I worked in sanitation or the Department of Education, if I would just go and write to the commissioner and say, I love you? I think that we can get away with this behavior in the FDNY because we have impulse control issues. You may have read about that in the newspaper sometime. It's actually a benefit, you see, in the fire service. If you're trapped in a fire and time is of the essence, you don't exactly want someone who is overly measured and restrained. It's a profession that is great for someone with ADHD. Deep focus when needed. But sometimes we're a little quick to anger. Once I gave my boss a journal for Christmas. On the cover, it was written, "People I'd like to punch in the face, a fireman's journal." It was a joke, of course, right? A joke. But let's just admit it, there's a reason why they would make a journal like that. And when I went to reorder it for some other folks I like, well, they were already sold out. It was such a popular item. So I continued to ponder out loud about the collective lack of impulse control around the fire service, myself included. "Impulse control," my wife said as she rolled over trying to sleep. "Yeah, I can tell. You really fit in well there, Ann. You see, it's a good thing, perhaps the best thing, to fit in somewhere. And sure, I don't have the best impulse control. But thank God I work in a place where I can accidentally email my boss and tell him I love him, bro. It was not the best decision, perhaps, or maybe the very best decision. I felt so caught, so cared for, so safe, so appreciative. I think we feel similarly when we experience the grace of God as shown to us by one another around. Because a message not acknowledged is a message not received, he emailed me right back and said, "I love you too." On 9/11, 343 members of the FDNY died when the World Trade Center collapsed. And my boss, Dan, responded from headquarters, his best friend, the chief of department, Peter Gansey. Dan survived. Chief Gansey did not. And I know that Dan wishes he could have said, "I love you" to Pete just one more time. So, dear friends, don't be afraid to catch one another or to be caught. Don't waste the moment. Don't be afraid of good things. Amen.